This week's Sedra speaks about the clothing of the Kohanim. And therefore I thought it would be a good idea to speak about clothing. And the whole idea of Tznius and what the purpose of clothing is. And we'll see that what I'm going to tell you fits in very nicely with the parsha. Many people think that Tznius is covering the body because the body is something erotic or negative and has to be covered. That is not the case. If it would be the case, then we should be makbid to cover animals' bodies for sure. And I don't know of anybody who's makbid not to go to the zoo unless the animals are dressed. In fact, the only place I know in the world where they dress up their dogs and cats is in Los Angeles, and that has nothing to do with Tznius because they don't dress themselves. So So what is it? What is this idea of Tznius? Basically, before the chait, let's first look how a person looks at themselves. We are not bodies with little Casper the Friendly Ghosts running around inside of us called the neshama. But we were created as neshamos. We are neshamas. We existed as neshamas for thousands of years since the creation of the world in a spiritual world. We don't remember that, because if we would, we wouldn't have free choice. But all of us were in a spiritual world from the time of creation when our neshamas were created. When we came into this physical world, we needed a physical body to be able to function. In that spiritual world, we could see without eyes and hear without ears and get around without arms and legs. When we came into this physical world, like an astronaut. An astronaut, as long as he's on terra firma, he's on the earth, he can function very nicely without any special suit or apparatus. But when he goes into outer space, so he needs an oxygen apparatus to breathe because there's no oxygen there. He needs a pressurized suit because there's no air pressure. He needs a radio to talk through because there's no sound waves. When he comes back to Earth, he takes off the suit and can function again very nicely. As long as we were neshamos in a spiritual world, we could function very nicely without a body. When we came into this physical world, we needed to put on a spacesuit called a body. We need eyes to see and ears to hear in a physical world. When we leave this world and go back to the spiritual world, so we take off the spacesuit. We leave it here. It's one of the reasons, I think, why when somebody dies, the way that we express mourning is by tearing our clothing. Because it says it's only the clothing that's been torn away, but the essence of the person still is there. Just a spacesuit. He leaves here. And he's gone now back to a spiritual world. Doesn't need it anymore. So that is what we are. And as long, till the chait of Adam and Chava, from the time of creation, which only lasted a few hours, it was clear that the ikar is the neshama, and the body merely serves the neshama and enables it to function in this physical world. That was clear. But once they sinned and did something with their body that went against the neshama, then it wasn't clear anymore. Because how can you say that the body is only there to serve the neshama if the body does things that are negative to the neshama? And not only that, since the body is what you see, you don't see any neshama, maybe there is no neshama. So after the chait of Adam and Chava, it became necessary for the concept of tznius. Tznius meaning that whenever there's an inner spiritual entity, which is the main thing, and you could be distracted by the externals and think that that's all there is or that that's the main thing, then you cover the externals and make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. What you see is not what I am. I am something that is beyond what you can see. So we cover the body so it's not distracting from understanding that there's a neshama. And that is the language of tznius. Hamatznia, there's a parak in Masechet Shabbos that's called Hamatznia. To make it oversimplified, right, without getting bogged down in the details, it basically is the following. In order to be chayiv on Shabbos, a korban, if you're mechal Shabbos b'shogeg, or a death penalty if you're mechal Shabbos b'mezid, you have to do something, an important act. For instance, carrying. You can't stam carry a little crumb, right, and be chayiv. You're not allowed to carry a little crumb. But until you carry a shear of a grogris, that's an important amount of food, then you're chayiv on Shabbos. And everything has its important amount that makes you chayiv. Less than that is not important enough to get a full punishment. However, if you took, you saved a little bit of your wedding cake. You keep it in a little jewelry box, and every once in a while you look at it and remember your wedding, and it's a very small piece of cake, less than the shear for Shabbos. And one Shabbos you forget, and you carry that piece of cake out into Rishus HaRabim, you're chayiv a korban. Why? It's less than the amount. But since you put it away and hid it away, it gives it importance. So you see from there, the word hamatznia doesn't mean to hide something because there's something wrong with it. Just the opposite. You're hiding it because it's important. You hide the body because if the body is all there is, you're an animal. But if you cover up the body in order not to be distracted by the body and point out that the body serves the neshama, then the body is very important. And that's why animals, you don't have to cover their body. Because what you see is what you get. They don't have a neshama. So there's nothing to be distracted by. That is them. That's what the Rabban Shem made. There's nothing to cover up. But by a human being where the ikar is the neshama, and you would be distracted and think the body is the ikar, then you cover the body in order to draw attention to what is not visible and make the statement, I'm not an animal, I'm not a body. Right? Don't be distracted by my body. There's more to me than meets the eye. That's tznius. And therefore we find tznius in three cases that lechora have nothing to do with erotic bodies or whatever. One case, the Medrash says, when the Mishkan was finished, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kan yofa hatznius. Here tznius is very proper. And that's why the Mishkan was covered with coverings like a bride. It had a veil in the front and a train in the back. Now what in the world was the Mishkan? Erotic? Why did that to cover the Mishkan? Well, to illustrate it, I once heard the following story. Relatives of Rav Shalom Shvadron, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, were at the Kosel on Shabbos. And they saw an Israeli writing a kvittel and putting it in the wall on Shabbos. So they assumed that maybe he has somebody sick at home who's deathly ill, and he thinks that it's okay, pikuach nefesh, to write a kvittel. So they ran over to him and they said, what are you doing? It's Shabbos. He said, maybe have somebody sick at home. He said, no. I'm the captain of a soccer team, Israeli soccer team. And we have a championship match coming up this week, and I am putting in a wish to the wall that we win. If that's what the Kosel HaMaravi is, a wishing wall, right? No difference than mirror, mirror on the wall, or wall, wall on the ground, right? It becomes an Avodah Zorah. The ikar of the Kosel, or the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, is the Shechina that's inside of it. But you can be distracted by the gold and silver of the externals and think this is some magic house, magic wall. So therefore, where the ikar is the inner spiritual entity, and you can be distracted by the externals, we cover the externals to distract attention from it and to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. Same exact idea of tznius. Second place, where tznius is extra special, is by talmidei chachamim. A talmid chacham has to be extra tsanua in how he eats, how he walks, and how he dresses. That's why the minig is by talmidei chacham to wear extra long clothing. Why? The body of a talmid chacham is more erotic than somebody else. Why does he have to be extra tsanua? The answer is there's a mitzvah to stand in awe of talmidei chachamim. Es Hashem Elokecha tira l'rabos talmidei chachamim. Es Hashem Elokecha tira. You have to stand in awe of a talmid chacham like you stand in awe of the Rabban Shalom. That is very dangerous, because if you direct that towards the personality of the talmid chacham, It borders on Avodah Zarah. So what do you direct it towards? The Torah that he possesses, which is the representation of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Therefore, the Talmud Chacham has to distract attention from his being and say, what you are respecting here is not me, it's a Torah that I possess.
What does a long cloak, like, help prevent?
Because it covers the externals.
Like,
and
even more so.
Right, what? Right. Even more so than the person who wears a short jacket or something like that. So it just distracts attention from the externals of the person, so you know that you're not respecting the person, but you're respecting his Torah. Yeah.
So why is the Mishkan
that
Beis HaMikdash made so beautiful?
Why is what?
Why is the Mishkan of Beis HaMikdash made so beautifully?
We'll get to that. Okay? Hold the question. It's a good question. The last place where it says there's a special inyan of tznius is by women. When the Rebbe Shem created Chava, he also said, Kan Yofa HaTznius. Why? Because even in this liberated, the world that's refined world, right? Women are still looked upon as objects. How do I know? Because they still have Miss America, Miss Israel, Miss Universe pageants. And even though they say that now we have the women speaking about their careers and reading their poetry, right? Still, it's all done in bathing suits, which has me believe that the careers and the bathing and the poetry is not the ikar. So women, from a secular standpoint, are basically looked upon for their external attributes. From a Torah standpoint, women are the foundation of Kedusha. Many, many other things, but just a simple idea. How do I know that? Because what determines whether any individual in this world has a holy neshama of a Jew or not? What determines it, unless you're a convert, who your mother was? And up until recently, mothers were women. So, Lamaisa, right, what determines whether you have a Nishmas Yisrael or not depends on your mother. If your mother was a plain Pashat Jew and your father was Genghis Khan, you're Jewish and you have a Neshama Kedosha. Your father could have been the biggest Tzaddik in the world. If your mother's not Jewish, unless you convert, you don't have a Neshama Kedosha. So the mother is the foundation of Kedushas Yisrael. So therefore, women, in order to distract attention from their externals and to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye, that's why tznius is extra important, because here you could be distracted by the externals. And the truth is that the Ribbono Shel Olam created those externals for an attraction, because he wants there to be an attraction between men and women, and that attraction should basically be in Kedushin, in marriage. He wants there to be a strong attraction between husband and wife, a physical attraction, because that strengthens their spiritual connection. But because it's such a strong attraction, it can be abused when it's not used in the proper setting. And therefore, in order not to be distracted by the externals, a person has to cover their externals and make the statement, there's more here than meets the eye. Don't get distracted by my body, because that's not the ikar of me. The ikar is what you can't see, my neshama. That is basically the concept of tznius. However, if that's really what tznius is, then wouldn't it be better if we walked around in tents? Not in clothing the way we wear, because our clothing accents the body. We wear form-fitting clothing, right, to a certain degree. Wouldn't it be better if we walked around in a tent, just had two slits for eyes, and we had this big hoop around us, and we all walk like that? Nobody would ever know we have a body. We'd just be these walking tents. Some people talk and dress like that. But in any case, that's not what tznius is. Why not? Not only that, the Torah seems to be concerned with how people look. it praises Sara Imenu that she was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. Who cares what she was beautiful? She was Sara Imenu. If she was an ugly hag, so we should, what difference does it make? She was Sara. Why does the Torah make a big deal about her beauty? And the same thing goes for men. Yosef, a tzaddik, was a handsome person. Who cares? Rivka, Rachel, the Torah says, they were Yefei Toar, Yefei Mareh. Who cares? Obviously, the Torah cares. So, together with the fact that we're supposed to cover the body in order to make the statement, don't get distracted by the body. At the other hand, we wear clothing that form-fitting, and obviously this external beauty is something important about it. The Vilna Gaon says, on the Pasuk, Sheker Hachain, the Hevel Hayofi, Isha Yiras Hashem Itisalo, he explains the Pasuk the following way. When is Chain and Yofi, Sheker and Hevel? When there's nothing more than that. But Isha Yiras Hashem, in a woman who fears God, she should be praised for her Yofi and her Chain, for her charm and her beauty. So there is an idea of physical beauty. So what is it? Manavshah. Are we supposed to hide the physical beauty and distract attention from it? Or is there something to it? So first you have to understand what we're talking about, beauty. Because beauty is a very subjective thing. I'll give you an example. There's a tribe in Africa called the Ubangis. The Ubangis have a very quaint custom, and you'll be very happy you don't live there. When their daughters are young, they take a half saucer, they break a plate in half, and they put it in their mouth between their upper lip and their gums. So it stretches their upper lip. As they grow and their lip gets stretched, they put a bigger saucer and a bigger one. By the time they're your age, every Ubangi woman has a lip that sticks out about a foot. Okay? And that is considered beautiful. If you don't have a lip that sticks out a foot by the Ubangis, you'll never find a shidduch. Whereas in America, if you have an upper lip that sticks out a foot, your parents will send you to the orthodontist and spend thousands of dollars to correct the situation, or you probably won't find a shidduch. I had a daughter that needed orthodonture work. I was thinking of sending her to the Ubangis. It would have been much cheaper, but the shidduchim there were a little too black for me, so I decided to give her the orthodonture work. In any case, so what's beautiful? If you're a Ubangi, it's beautiful to have an upper lip that sticks out a foot. If you're an American, that's not beautiful, just the opposite. Yet it says by Esther, Esther nosei shein be'enei kol ro'eha. Everybody thought Esther was charming. How could that be? Either she had an upper lip that stuck out a foot or she didn't. If she did, she was charming to the Ubangis, but not to the Americans. If she didn't, she was charming to the Americans, but not to the Ubangis. How can it be that she was nosei shein be'enei kol ro'eha? In addition, that which it says by Sarah, that she was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7, doesn't make sense. At least not from this side of the table. I would imagine that a 20-year-old girl is prettier than a 7-year-old girl. Okay? So what does it mean she was as pretty at 20 as she was at 7? Now the answer is, there's a kind of beauty that is culturally dependent on culture. That beauty is not what we're talking about, because it's really subjective. There's a beauty, though, that is universal. That is the beauty of a 7-year-old who has the beauty of the innocence of youth. That is a beauty that is universal. It's basically the external expression of inner beauty. That's the beauty we're talking about. Sara Imenu was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. She maintained that inner beauty which shone to the outside. That is the ultimate of tznius. Tznius is not hiding the body. It's clothing it in a tasteful way so it can be attractive but not attracting. And there's a tremendous difference between attractive and attracting. Attractive means that when somebody looks at you, doesn't make a difference, man or woman, they say, wow, The way that that person presents themselves, and it's not just dress, how they speak, how they walk, how they present themselves, including the way they dress, reflects that inner kedusha that they have, that inner refinement. You look at somebody, right, the way their hair looks, the way their makeup looks, the way that their dress looks, or a man, the same thing. It reflects an inner refinement. That's the beauty that is the balance between covering the body and making the statement, this is not the ikkar. At the same time, the body, the way that it's covered, reflects that inner kedusha. So it works both ways. You cover the body so it shouldn't be attracting and distracting, but you cover it in a tasteful way so it's attractive and reflects that inner kedusha. That's the ultimate of tznius. It works both ways. In the first respect, begodim are called beged, because the word beged means to be a traitor. Because since the body was a traitor to the neshama, you have to cover it. So it's beged. It's a bogate. On the other hand, clothing is called mechabdusi. Right? It's called that which honors me. Because it's also called levush. Lo busha. Takes away the busha of a person. We'll get to that in a second. But it's also called mechabdusi. It says that I never called my clothing. I called it mechabdusi, that which honors me. Because the clothing reflects that inner refinement of a person when it's done tastefully. When it's done in an attractive way, not an attracting way. Attracting distracts you from the inner beauty. Attractive reflects that inner beauty. That's the ultimate of tznius. You can cover every part of the body that could be distracting and attracting, but if you cover it in a way that makes it distracting and attracting, you're not tznua. And if you don't cover parts of the body that are distracting, because God made it like that, that He wants there to be an attraction between husband and wife, the mela between males and females, and there are certain parts of the body that are extra distracting and attracting because of the nature of where they are on the body, right? So those parts have to be covered, right? And I know that girls have a hard time understanding, right, this fact, because girls and boys are made differently. I know I have teenage daughters. Now they have their own teenage daughters. I'm sure they're going through the same thing. But they can never understand what difference it make, you know, an inch here, an inch there. So somebody to see the top of my knee or the bottom of my knee, what in the world, or my elbow, right? What is so attractive about elbows? But the truth is that you're saying that because you are girls and hopefully are not attracted by other girls' elbows. But you should understand that men are very, very much affected by what they see. And it's the reason the Rebbe Shem made the world like that. And there's a good reason for it. He wants there to be a strong physical attraction between men and women. And it's supposed to be used in marriage. But every koach the Rebbe Shem put into the world can be used for the good or for the bad. As powerful as it is for the good, which is kedushin, kedusha, which is the way of promoting the existence of the world, right? By people getting married and having children. And not only that, but the connection between a husband and wife is the ultimate kedusha. At the same time, that same attraction and that same connection, when done out of marriage, is the worst kind of tumah. It's gili arayis. So the Rebbe Shem put this power into nature. Right, it's the second strongest drive after the drive to exist. The strongest drive a person has is to remain alive. He'll do anything to get air, water, food, or whatever to exist. The second strongest drive is the drive between men and women, because that's the extension of existence, of bringing more people into this world. So that's why the attraction is very, very strong. So I can understand that A girl can't understand what could be attractive about an elbow or a knee. But the Metzius is, that's the way it is. That's the way the world is. And if you don't understand that, and therefore don't understand how important it is to protect that that distractive force isn't there, right, then you're avoiding the reality of what life is. To tell a story, a bocher came to Rav Ella Lapyan. He was a mashgiach in Kfar Hasidim. And he wanted permission to take off from the yeshiva for a day or two because he had a relative that was getting married. And he wanted to attend the wedding. So Rav Ella said, I give you permission to go, but you know it's the summertime now. Are all of your relatives who are going to be at the wedding people that are frum and going to be dressed properly? He said, no, they're not. He said, but Rebbe, don't worry. I've reached a level, Baruch Hashem, where these things don't bother me anymore. So Rav Ella said, you can go to the wedding, but with one condition. I want you to call a friend of mine who happens to live in that area where you're going to be going, and I want you to call him. So he figured he wanted to call him to give him regards or whatever. An hour later he came back to Rav Ella and he said, you must have given me the wrong number, because every time I call this number I get a doctor's office. He said, yeah, that's my friend. My friend's a doctor. He said, I'm a 90-year-old man, I'm blind in one eye, and these things still bother me. If they don't bother you, there's something seriously wrong with you, I'd like to see a doctor. So that is the way of the world. It's a natural attraction. And if that becomes the ichor, and you're distracted with that, then people are reduced to animals because you forget about the fact that they have a neshama. So another story they tell, there was an old Rosh Yeshiva and an old sick woman came for a bracha. She walked into his office and by a mistake she locked the door behind her. So now there was a problem of yichud. So the Rosh Yeshiva, instead of getting up and walking out of the room to the other end of the room where the door was, there was a window behind him which went out onto a patio, and he climbed out the window. So his students saw this and they said to him, Rebbe, you're an old man and this woman is an old sick woman. What could have happened had you walked to the door to open the door and unlock it? He said, the Satan could have made me young and her well. That's the way the world is. So you have to understand that there is a distracting force.
I understand the story?
In other words, they said to him, what could have happened? You're old and she's sick. He said, the Yetzer Hara could have made me young and her well. In other words, the attraction, old, young, sick, that is still there. Right, that's how the Yetzer Hara works. Okay, in old age homes, right, where people are barely alive anymore, they still have to separate men from women because things go on there that are not on the up and up. Okay, so that Yetzer Hara never leaves a person until they're no longer in this world. Okay, that's the Metzius. Okay, so So basically, tznius, therefore, is a combination. Clothing is there to cover the body, to distract attention from the externals, and to make the statement there's more here than meets the eye. But it's also there to clothe the body in a refined way and express what the inner beauty of the body, of the person is. It's on the one hand a cover, at the same time it covers the body and to express that inner thing. That answers your question why the Mikdash was so beautiful. Beauty is important, but the beauty has to reflect that inner beauty and not be something that contradicts it. That is the ultimate of dress. Therefore, in this week's Sedra, the Torah says two purposes for the Big Day Kahuna. One was lekadsho lekahanoli, make special clothing for Aaron and his children in order to consecrate them, to make them holy. And Chazal say bigdeyam aleim kunasam aleim, when they wear that clothing then they're kohanim, and without the clothing they're considered not kohanim anymore. Legabe the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the ikar of the kohen is not his body. It's his neshama. So cover the body in order to bring out that inner kedusha that makes the kohen the kohen. Covering the body will make the kohen aware and other people aware that the ikar is not his body. The ikar is his neshama. However, the Torah says another purpose for those clothing. L'kavod l'tiferes. It's for honor and glory. Meaning, once you cover the body and you make the statement that the kedusha is not the body, but it's the neshama, then you want to cover it in a way that when you look at that clothing, you see that inner kedusha. So the clothing of the Kohen were an honor and a glory, and they transmitted and expressed externally what that inner kedusha of the body was. And each of the clothing represented a different aspect of the Kohen's inner kedusha and transmitted it externally. So both things were important. The covering of the body and the covering it in a way that transmitted what the ikar inner kedusha is. That's the ultimate tznius, yes.
When we're parents of Mitzvahim and we have to start influencing our girls when they're older, how do we get this through their minds? Because like we're already older and like we've already hopefully understood the laws of space and like are respectful, but how do we drill it into the next generation?
Probably by not drilling it in. Meaning, sometimes people are obsessed with this to the point where it becomes, it's a natural, I assume, because I've had daughters, right? It's a natural desire of young women to want to dress in a way that is attractive, bordering on attracting. Okay? That seems to be by 90% of young women. From, not from, it makes no difference. It's just that when you're not frum, it goes to an extreme. When you're frum, it can't go to that much of an extreme. If you demand things that are not necessary and may be a hither in tznius for someone who understands it, but is oppressive to somebody who doesn't understand it, who's just growing into it, and has these natural, seemingly tendencies of wanting to show off their body, right? If you make it clear to a girl like that, I'm not going to demand from you what is not halachically necessary. You're not on that level yet. But what's halachically necessary, I can't compromise. So a parent who makes that clear to her daughter, right, has a better chance of her following the halacha than if she demands things that are not halachic, are extra, right, then the girl can't make the difference between what is extra and what's not, and she's not prepared to do the extra, she won't do the simple things either. Many schools also make that mistake, I think. So, for a girl who wants to do this...
But that's
a problem because it's not.
There are things
that are halachic and things that are not halachic.
Yeah, but men
they make it.
Yeah. That could be. That's also maybe halachic. But creating a minhag ha-makom that's not necessary is also a problem. In other words, there are things. What kind of dress and what? Yes, it may be that in the ideal, that is not the ultimate in tznius, because it's borderline attracting and not necessarily attractive. But if it's not lahalacha, and you're demanding it from someone who's not prepared yet to understand these ideas, then when you make something too much asr, then everything's mutter. But if you make the differences between what is minimal, this is beyond this, you can't do, and what is maximal, right, then people maybe are willing to accept what is pure halacha, even if I'm not ready to do something beyond that. And it's a very dangerous thing to confuse halacha with what is a chumrah and what is a kula. Right? The problem in this world is there are many people who are makel in a lot of things. And sometimes it's okay to be makel. Depends on the situation. But some people have this idea that they should always try to find the most cool dika thing. And they think that's the halacha. And then they look at people who keep the halacha as fanatics. And then there are people the opposite, who do everything l'chumra. And they think that's the halacha. And they look at people who do what the halacha is as abaryonim. That's the problem. If everybody would know what halacha is, what's a chumra, what's a kula, then if I'm mekel, I can't look at people who keep the halacha as fanatics. They're just doing what's supposed to do. And I have, for my reasons, a reason why I'm allowed to be more lenient. Or, I'm doing this a chumra. I want to be extra careful. But the people who are doing it, what's okay, is halacha, are not abaryonim. Right? If we know what halacha is, what's the chumra, what's the kula, would be much better off than people thinking their chumras are halacha or their kulas are halacha.
What was the idea of
busha?
What was the idea of busha with embarrassment?
Oh, busha. Busha comes from the same, Rav Sham Shom Falher says, of Lohish Boshesh. Vayar ha'am ki Boshesh Moshe. Busha has a connection to the being inhibited, holding back, right, tarrying. The idea of busha is really on the face, right? Why? Because the face is called panim. L'chora, it's the most external part of your body, and it's only one. And there are people who are two-faced, but l'maisa, you're supposed to only have one face. So if I would think of a Hebrew word for face, I would call it a chutz, an external singular. Not panim, internal plural. But the idea is that your face reflects everything that's inside. You can read on a person's face fear, happiness, sadness, and so on. It reflects many inner emotions at the same time. So it's plural and it's internal. Because the face is the screen of everything that's going on within you. And that is the place where busha means to be inhibited. Inhibited means the following. Not everything I think is proper to bring outside. Certain things are private. And not everything that I think is proper altogether for me. Busha is where you feel embarrassed because this is not appropriate for me. And where does it show? On that screen. It's like a red light that lights up to say this is something that should be kept inside and not expressed externally. Either because it's private or it's inappropriate. That's what busha is. Busha is associated with Yiras Hashem. Because when you feel something is inappropriate or something is private and should remain inside, right, that is a sign of Yiras Shamayim. So that is busha. That's why levush, wearing clothing, is low busha, takes away the busha. Because it covers your body and makes you realize that you're not an animal. There's more to you, right, that is inside and should be kept inside to a certain degree and not flaunted on the outside. That's the idea of busha. And therefore, everything that has to do with the opposite of tznius is all external. Erva comes from the word or, skin, right? Erva pritzus is breaking boundaries. It's all emphasizing the external and not the internal. Whereas tznius, the opposite, is emphasizing the internal, not the external.
How, back to what you were saying, how everyone looks at everyone else that they're not keeping halacha, but there are so many opinions for everything, so I feel like nowadays
there are definitely guidelines of what is base halacha, and there are those that say, well, in this case you should be machmir or whatever, but if you learn halacha, you know that at least in one place or one rav or whatever, this is the standard. There is a place to be machmer because there are more opinions that say that this is, but that's not the halacha per se, but it is a positive thing sometimes to be machmer. There are definitely opinions that you can rely on under circumstances where it's proper to be makel, right? But there is, if you know properly and you learn properly, there are three levels. There's a level of chumra, a level of kula, and a level of base halacha. And if you don't confuse those things, you have a much better chance of looking at people properly.
I agree, but I just feel like with children, especially in communities, growing up in communities, it's so hard to teach that to children, because whatever they're growing up in their environment, then they're going to look at any environment not like theirs, that they're either.
Right, so that's why it could be that you have to, when they become understand these things, to train them to understand that there can be different standards at different places, mm-hmm. because people follow different levels of halacha, and as long as it's acceptable, right, within the pale of halacha, it's not outside of that, then you have to say, look, this is not my shita, right, but I can accept the fact there could be a different shita.